Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Blue Jays Center podcast. A weekend split with the Tampa Bay Rays at Tropicana Field for the Blue Jays, and that's certainly something that we will take, especially to start the year. Here we go.
Turn up your volume, because you're about to listen to the Sick Podcast. Blue Jays Center.
Bautista drives it deep.
The sickest Toronto Blue Jays podcast. It's gonna be sick.
Cole Whiston, Rob Pentalamon, and James Price in that order on your screen here with the Blue Jays Center podcast presented by the Sick Podcast Network. And a packed show for you today. Not as packed as the last one, but still relatively packed. We're going to recap the Rays series, as I've already mentioned at the top of the show. We're going to split there. Then we're going to go to the banter bag, making its debut, getting some questions from the fans. Then we're going to go preview the Astros series because that's where the Jays are headed to next. Doesn't get any easier. And then we're going to go to advanced analysis. And then we're going to talk about the farm system. We said that we would potentially bring that up every once in a while. And today's one of those days. So that'll finish off the show on this one. Welcome back, guys. How you doing, Rob?
Oh, awesome, man. Happy Easter to all those who celebrate. If not, hope you had an enjoyable Sunday watching the Blue Jays have another blowout win. I'm sensing a little bit of a trend here, folks. Right before we record a podcast, it just seems that the Jays just have these great games. We can't go on here and criticize because the last sample we saw was really good. Offense was great. Kevin Gausman, Dyson, his return, an abbreviated start, but was very good. Bullpen, no concerns. Yeah, another neat and tidy victory. And I'm happy with the split. Got to go 500 on this first road trip. I said it. So far, so good.
So what you're saying, Rob, is that we got to do one basically every day. Okay. Got it. No, I'm kidding. Not guaranteeing a damn thing, but boys, what a Sunday. Eh? What a Sunday. Beautiful outside, which is not very often in Toronto, but you got one today and a beautiful game. Offense galore, pitching staff awesome. Kevin Gausman was beautiful today. Looked like he pitched all spring. Like he looks like he was ready to go. Obviously the pitch count a little low, but as you would expect, he was awesome. The team looked great. And I think Cole mentioned right off the top, a split at the Trop. That's a win for me. That's a series dub, in my opinion.
Another win for me, too. I just heard that they're not actually going back to the Trop until September. So we have almost 6 full months without going back to the Trop. Yeah, no. I think that's the second best news I've heard all day, aside from everything going good with the game.
Yeah, it was day and night this weekend, as we expected this Jays season to be. The first game, really great. The last game, really great. The two games in the middle, not so great. But the best thing maybe in those two games was Genesis Cabrera causing some fireworks in the middle of a game, even though we were getting blown out, basically. It came out today that apparently he was suspended for 3 games. Obviously, the Jays are going to appeal that because why? Why would he be suspended for 3 games, right? We all agree that that's ridiculous.
I have watched hockey this year. And the amount of suspension talk has been ridiculous. And people have gotten to know George Parros on there for the wrong reasons. Who in the hell is figuring this out, boys? I am so sorry. I am watching Caballero get right up in Genesis Cabrera's face, and then he pushes him away. Yeah, got a little high. He's not hurt. He didn't fall down and start crying. No. And then Genesis Cabrera, after he pushes him, goes and sits down and takes a drink of water.
Yeah.
And he gets 3 games. Like, what are we doing here, guys? It's just, it's incredible what this player's safety or whatever, whoever the hell figures this out, what they were smoking, figuring this one out. I'm glad he appealed it, of course.
To be fair, like someone else got thrown at this weekend too, I think in the Braves Phillies. And guy got suspended 3 games as well.
It was actually Yoan Ramirez from the Mets. He got 3 games for throwing at Rhys Hoskins. And you just kind of think, like, obviously James mentioned there in a vacuum how ridiculous 3 games is for just like what seemed to be a little hard shove, like nothing there, like little playground shove, if we're being honest with you there. Like, yeah. It's be real. And then a guy throwing a ball 90 plus miles per hour at a guy intentionally, if you look at relative 3 games, I think that's ridiculous. I think that the Blue Jays are right to appeal. I think it's going to get shrunken down, maybe like a game. I don't anticipate it'll go more than that, but it is what it is. Yeah. I will say, though, not to be too much of a homer, it did look like Genesis Cabrera was the instigator in that situation, so hard to really have his back too much. But yeah, I will agree, I think three games is kind of egregious considering the whole circumstances around it.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's fine and that's it for me, but whatever, that is
what, yeah, it is. But maybe it's a league-wide thing given the circumstances that we saw with the Braves guy as well.
Yeah, I guess three is the minimal, I guess you can go, but even then, that's
or they're just going to be harder this year, which is kind of bullshit.
Yeah, it's not like anything's been too egregious. And anyways, boys, that just fired me up when I saw three games in all hockey season. I've been thinking about that. But I just didn't like it, because if you think about it in the situation, right, because I'm shocked, for one, the guy didn't try and slide into third, and he ran kind of by third base, and Cabrera's there backing up the play. So he kind of ends up right in front of him, and he's going, hey, what's up? Hey, what's up? Right in Cabrera's face. It's like, hey, first off, what are you doing? Second of all, get off me. Like, I don't need to smell your breath. So, yeah, three games is nuts. And he didn't get hurt or anything. And nothing. There was
it'll be unfortunate, though, because Cabrera, obviously, sure, knowing how the Blue Jays bullpen already, the current state it is, without Eric Swanson, without Jordan Romano, especially on this hard road trip. They got through the Tampa series, but now you got Houston and New York. You're going to need all the help you can get from that pen. And it's unfortunate that Yennis just got himself thrown out there and suspended. Hopefully the Blue Jays are able to overcome it. Hopefully it's managed down to a 2-game suspension, and then in the end, it doesn't end up costing them. But yeah, it's the shorthanded bullpen just got a little bit more shorthanded on this road trip.
Yeah,
and just as volatile as that suspension could be, the Jays' offense was just that this weekend. Great, like I said, off the first game, abysmal. The second two games literally looked like the same team that we saw last year, and then of course today they looked like they did in game one. 20 runs across the four games. That equals out, obviously, to 5 runs a game, which is pretty good. When you look at it from a grand scheme of things. The most impressive part about that offense this weekend, the one consistent thing through all four games, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Rob.
No, absolutely. And, I mean, this is like an early spoiler to our advanced analytics segment, which is going to go on a full rampage on how awesome Vlad's been at the plate. I won't go too far into the numbers because we do have a special segment for that. But just from the eye test in general, he's not giving away any at-bats. I mean, all the at-bats, they're all tough. Today, walked 3 times, didn't get a hit. Only had 1 extra base hit the entire weekend. It was that 450-foot bomb on opening day. But it's not really been an issue. Every single at-bat, he goes out there, he battles, he doesn't give anything away. The approach to the plate seems to really be working. That's gone throughout the whole lineup. Just like last year, Vlad got off to a good start. So I'm going to be a little bit cautiously optimistic. Got to wait and see like we did last year. But I think for a season that's been laid out as the one where Vlad needs to be huge, how much of an X factor he is for this team and their postseason / World Series chances, you couldn't have asked for a much better start, if I'm being honest with you. I think the approach is good. The underlying numbers look terrific, as they always have. I think Vlad's stock was already pretty high, but I'd buy some if you don't have some already. I think he's going to have a monster year.
The patience at the plate is awesome. Now, there's a fine line, though. You don't want to be overpatient, because I think you guys were obviously watching the game today, and you saw it was either his last at bat or his second last at bat, where he took like 89, I think it was, in the inside corner. And I'm like, Vladdy, you've turned on like 100. Like, rip that thing. If it's foul, it's foul. Like, protect the plate. And he was arguing that it was a ball. And I'm like, Vladdy, it's right there, bud. Like, there's being a little too patient. But you know what? Overall, I'm not going to complain about his start to the season. He's been outstanding. And a great kind of thing to build off of that is the first few innings. I think he had 2 walks in the first 2 innings. And I don't know if it was both times he came around to score, but at least one time he did. And the second one, in the second inning, when Turner hit the bases clearing double, that one was the big one for me. You have 2 on and 2 out with Vladdy at the plate. And how many times have we seen him trying to swing out of his shoes to hit the 3-run shot or to try and hit something 150 miles an hour off the bat? He didn't do that. He was really patient, as Rob was mentioning, all weekend long, and got on base, passed the baton to Justin Turner. And we know what happened after that. So
I think you read my mind, Pricey. Just that at bat is the one that I was going to refer to right now. The 2 on, the 2 out, and that, I believe, was it the top of the second? Yeah, top of the second. Alexander was the pitcher for the Rays. Down 3-0 to Vladdy. And I kept thinking in my mind, if Vlad just keeps the bat on the shoulder, he's going to go to first base. Alexander's not throwing him 3 straight balls in the zone. The 3-0 pitch was a hanger off-speed pitch, low 80s, just right over the heart of the plate. I feel like Vlad would have been tempted to swing at that. You know, like we mentioned last year, how Vlad at times has had a tendency to think he has to carry this offense, especially in a night where Bo Bichette wasn't in the lineup due to an injury. And I thought, you know, if Vlad, this might be an opportunity where he might swing out of his shoes, like you mentioned there, Pricey. And good for him. Took the 3-0 pitch, ended up walking, and obviously Turner, huge hit there. I'm sure we'll talk about him a ton as well.
Big time.
Yeah, I think that that's the other bright spot of this offense, at least through four games in the season. I was talking about on the Blue Jays Center podcast after the game 2 days ago that he just looks a touch late. Didn't look like that at all today. And not only did he not look late, he looked like he knew exactly what he was doing up there on the plate. I think that you look at this offense as a whole over the across the four games, those got to be the two bright spots right now.
Oh, for sure. Were you talking about Vladdy and Turner you're talking about?
Yeah.
Oh, big time. I mean, if you guys watch any of my YouTube stuff, I with my season review, off-season preview, I was going at Justin Turner because no one was thinking Ohtani and Soto and stuff. So, but the Justin Turner thing, you read into those clutch stats, and it's just like, yeah, what did this team struggle so bad last year? It was in the clutch, and you saw it in the first two innings, right? He hits an RBI single with two out and a guy in scoring position, and then a two-run double with the bases loaded and two out in the second inning to go up 4-0.
Awesome at bat too.
He scored. He drove in four of the first five runs of the game. I mean, it was important, and I just think he's just going to be such a massive part. And if Vladdy can be patient and just pass the baton to him, more often than not, the good things are going to happen.
Yeah, my and final just note.
The overriding effect of that Turner performance, like you mentioned, driving in four of the first five runs, getting the Blue Jays out to a lead. All of a sudden now you have Kevin Gausman, who's on a constrained pitch count. He doesn't have to be perfect. You know, he can go out there and start attacking hitters, start going through that lineup, knowing he's got a bit of a lead. You got three innings out of Mitch White. Could you imagine in a closer game, you know, how the heart rate would have been running with Mitch White, who, by the way, credit to him, was awesome today. Three scoreless innings. Did he give up a hit? I don't believe he did.
No, he just walked one guy, but God. How many times in the spring did we hear, oh, he's touching 98? He's just here in 93 today, and I'm like,
exactly. He didn't. The velo wasn't there today, but the results were, thankfully. And like you mentioned, like the pitching, it was able to go in kind of a bit of a cruise control, able to attack hitters. And that's the overriding effect that performance had. I mentioned it on our last podcast, Justin Turner, you can measure his offensive production. And we all agree it's likely not going to be as high as Brandon Belt's was. What you can't measure is a guy's ability to hit in the clutch. And today we saw it, two massive clutch hits. In the first inning to score the first run of the game, and obviously that two-run double, the home run there was a little bit cherry on top. So absolutely awesome outing for Justin Turner, who figures to be a major role hitting in the Blue Jays cleanup spot.
My final note on the offense that perfectly paints a picture, I think, in terms of how this series went, was 7-plus walks in the first game and the last game, and below 4 walks in the middle two. One for the second game and 3 in game 3. I think that should tell the story right there. And in both those two games, in the middle part of the series, they looked like they were, you know, literally trying to make something out of nothing. Whereas, of course, the two games that they won handedly, they didn't have to do that at all. So I think that, you know, it's no secret that we've talked about that before. As long as that continues, this team should be, again, up in the upper echelon for offensive teams this year. This segues perfectly into the banter bag segment of our show, fans or questions from the fans, and we'll go straight with the Turner one. Four games in, it's early, and the guy who mentioned or who asked the question on Blue Jays Center, his name was Julian. He also acknowledged that it was early, but through four games, did we make the right choice on Justin Turner as our DH this year, James?
You guys know my thoughts on the red turn, but I don't want to overreact. Yes, it is four games and the whole Brendan Belt effect, and I get that. But watching him do it against the Rays boys at the Trop, like, it's just, it hits a little different to me. But I just like the mentality, the approach. And I think I can't remember where I saw it. I don't know if one of you guys brought it up, but it was Brendan Belt's clutch numbers last year. Like, they were awful. And sure, the overall numbers for Brandon Belt were great, but the constant thing that plagued that team last season, he was a major part of that. And what Justin Turner doesn't do is cave under the pressure, as you saw today. I love what I see from him. Sure, there are going to be some holes at his age. There's no doubt about that. And great pitchers will probably be able to expose that a little bit more. But him being the professional that he is, I got all the faith in the world in the guy. Now, he's going to hit some bumps. The question is, how does he get out of them, right? Early in the season, you're going to see some positive stuff like today. Awesome. But we did see him in the spring, you know, get beaten by some velocity and stuff like that. So how does the regular season move on? We'll have to see. But overall, I think it was a good decision, just in my biased nature. But overall, it's a great start. Great start for my narrative.
Before we go to you, Rob, I'm going to present the other side of things. Because the question is, did we make the right choice?
Yes.
And I will go with the other obvious choice this offseason that was available literally right up until the end of spring training, and that was JD Martinez. Everything that Justin Turner does well that we like about Justin Turner and everything that he brings to the table, JD Martinez does better. And he has done better in the last 3 years, and he's 3 years younger. And he gets from the same side of the plate. So I think that in terms of did we make the right choice? No, I think there was a better choice. But at the end of this year, we'll be able to actually address this question onto, you know, who had the better year, I guess, is how we could do it. But I think that right now, no. The answer is no, because there was a better option available for the same price tag who did the exact same things that Justin Turner did, but just better and younger.
Rob. Fair. That's fair. I also see it as the fact that we don't even know if JD Martinez even wanted to be with the Jays.
Well, yes. That yes. Side of thing. Right, so, but we don't know that. Right?
No, we so don't. Like, and we never will.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I said it during the offseason when the Justin Turner signing was made that he wasn't my first choice. DH, I think like you mentioned, Cole, JD Martinez was a guy that I personally would have preferred over Justin Turner. I did acknowledge the one thing important that you mentioned there, James, is that his willingness to be here in Toronto, knowing that for a DH, the Rogers Center played, as like I mentioned last podcast, a ballpark that is not particularly a hitter-friendly environment. Not that Citi Field particularly is in with the Mets, but I thought that was a major point. We all know about the Toronto tax, how needing to get a guy here, you'd probably have to overpay his market value or subsequently or co-currently give him more years. Yep. So either or, those are some logistical issues with JD Martinez, which obviously we don't know exactly how the negotiation went behind the table. But regardless, Justin Turner is here. I don't think that JD Martinez is a much better hitter than Justin Turner is. Like I think that Justin Turner can provide that kind of I think overall player. I think he can provide similar value. And if he continues to hit in the clutch situations, isn't that exactly what we wanted this team to do last year? So I think if that's a real thing, if the hitting in clutch situations isn't like is an actual repeatable skill, it's something that's credit to the hitter, which we all believe. We don't believe it's all robotic and that the situation doesn't matter. I mean, Justin Turner, he's been in as many big games as anybody in the league. So if that's a real thing, then I'm very interested. I'd rather roll the dice and see what we can get out of a guy who's probably not as good of a hitter, but can come up big in the big spots. And we know hitting behind Vlad, hitting behind Bo, hitting behind George Springer, Justin Turner is going to have a lot of opportunities like this over the course of the season to drive home big runs. And if that's a real thing, then I think we might have to reevaluate. But obviously, every question we answer, guys, we have to preface it's early. It's only four games. Right. We understand baseball is a sample size sport, but we're here for entertainment value. We're going to give takes. And right now, I'm going to be a coward and sit on the fence. But I see both sides.
Speaking of sit on the fence, this is about as early as it gets for the next question in our banter bag. Daniel asks, IKF or Babe Schneider? Davis Schneider, obviously. And the reason why he got the nickname Babe is because when he came up last year, he did Babe Ruth things. Things that Babe Ruth didn't even do when he came up in the league.
Today
he went
too.
Over 31 to end off the season. So they brought in IKF, which Rob has mentioned previously, in the attempt to bring up the floor. But Rob also... I'll go to Rob on this one. Rob also thinks that if Davis Schneider can be that guy or in between that guy he was last year, then he will win the job. Rob.
Yeah. No, I said it. I think IKF is a guy who's going to raise the floor of this roster. I think the reason why he's here is so that they can have a baseline competent big league player starting every day. I know that given a 2-year deal, this might contradict my next point. Right. But at the same time, I don't feel as though IKF is penciled in the lineup every single game for the rest of the season. I do believe that should an Ernie Clement, should a Davis Schneider, an Addison Barger, I know not the same position, but a Relvis Martinez come up and start raking, I don't see why they'd be married to a guy like IKF. Like we mentioned, 2-year deal, we get it. But at the same time, you're trying to win a World Series right now. And I personally believe, I'd bet the field, I'd bet that one of these guys, right now it looks like Davis Schneider continues to hit at a ridiculous level, at a Babe Ruth level, so maybe he's out in front, but I do think one of these guys will eventually take that role and run with it. I think IKF is just going to be here, just like I mentioned, raise the floor of the team, but ultimately I'm going to bet that he doesn't play every day by the end of the season. I'm going to bet that's one of these guys is going to figure it out and be something. Ernie Clements also looked really good. So, yeah, I don't see IKF as a commitment there necessarily. I think that his job is very fluid. Maybe it is right now, but over the course of the season, I don't see why a Davis Schneider or Ernie Clement can take that role full time.
The other thing to mention before I go to you, James, is he's also a trade option. With that contract at that price tag and his role as a player, he could be traded to pretty much any team at the deadline if, like you said, Rob, somebody else wins the job, James.
I'm definitely not married to the whole IKF stuff. Like, Davis Schneider obviously has the upside. And something I wanted to bring up, and it's to do with the prospect system and the way Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins have kind of gone about it over the course of their tenure with the Jays. They've gone with a lot of the safer prospects, right? They haven't really gone after the guys that with the higher ceilings. Like, they did this offseason. They did this past draft, bringing a guy like Arjun Namala. He has a very high upside, but dealing with these safe bets, and that's really what an IKF is. But the Davis Schneider, you know, has a little bit of a hole in the swing, right? You throw him in like an elevated fastball, he's kind of got a hole there. But you throw it low, and it's a lefty, he'll do damage. And that's what this team missed last year. Just damage, damage, damage. And I don't know. I think, Rob, you mentioned that you're not married to him having the everyday job or even being on this team for the second year, really. Yeah, I'm with you. Just because you have an abundance of guys who can do the same thing he does. And especially watching Ernie Clement play the defense he has over the last couple of days. It's quite fun.
To finish off the banter bag section, two questions that we'll quickly brush past. One, because it's very early, and that one is from Andrew, basically saying, like, if it doesn't go well this year, is there any chance that the rebuild starts, like, at the deadline? I guess would be the question. Like, if we're 10 games below 500 at the deadline, do you think the Jays start the rebuild now, or do they wait until the offseason?
I would think that they would wait. Personally, I just think of how this organization operates. I do think that I wouldn't personally. I think that if you're going to pull the cat out of the bag and just pull the plug on this core, you would do it when you have more value. Like, for example, like basically what you're saying, start the rebuild as in trade Bo Bichette, trade Vladimir Guerrero Jr., not pay them. You would get more value for them if you traded them to a team who would have them for two playoff runs as opposed to just one. I do think, though, that this organization, regardless, they see the kind of talent that they have with a Bo, with a Vlad. And if they're both having good seasons, which in a sense is kind of counterintuitive, because if they're both having good seasons, it's hard to really envision a scenario where they're really that bad, where you have to pull the plug on this season this year. So it in a sense, I don't think it's all that realistic a scenario. But for the sake of the question, we'll pretend like it is. I still feel like coming into next season, you'd still want to pay a Bo Bichette, a Vlad Jr., if they're both having monster seasons. If Vlad has a really good season like we're all expecting him to, if Bo continues to be the guy, why not extend the core? Why not just pay them in the offseason? I mean, I think that's what you got to do. Didn't you build a whole team this offseason to kind of not spend, to scale back? And I get that spending more money in the offseason on those guys would make the payroll even bigger, despite the fact that they still wouldn't have had won any playoff success. I think that if Bo and Vlad are playing well, you want to keep them. I think that's the number one default for them. If the season does go poorly, though, I think pivoting too early before pivoting too late is definitely the better choice. I think that's where I stand.
Yeah, you made the last point there about, Rob, about, you know, you'd never want to pivot too late. And for anybody watching who has watched the Toronto Raptors pivot and how they pivoted very slowly, and it is unwatchable to this point. I don't want this to go through. I don't want to go through that with this Jays team. We all know how, you know, rebuilds go in baseball. They don't last 1-2 years. Now, I understand the Toronto is a big market. I get that. But big market is in, like, willing to spend money. If you're going to re-sign Bo, if you're going to re-sign Vladdy, I think you would have already done it. And there's a reason they've structured these contracts the way they have, that nobody other than, like, Jose Barrios, no one's got a real, and I guess Yariel Rodriguez, no one's got a contract past like 2 or 3 years. There's a reason for that, as Bo and Vladdy are up after two. And if they do pivot, as in to re-sign the guys, then great. It extends your window. It extends your window of, I guess, relevancy. But the last, and a prime example, Josh Donaldson, guys. Remember how they waited and waited and waited to pivot? Now, again, I understand you want to keep pushing because you had that core there. You got Julian Merriweather, and that's it for Josh Donaldson. Yeah, it was kind of painful. So if you're going to pivot, rip the Band-Aid off and pivot. But it's a fine line, and it's a really, really tough decision to make, because if you're Ross and you're Mark and you decide to pivot to the point of getting rid of those guys, they're not going to be around to see the next core. So it's an interesting situation that's going to be resolved in the next year and a half.
Now, I will say, though, with the third wild card being a thing and being that you can get into the postseason with mid to high 80s wins now, maybe not in the American League. Maybe that was an outlier season last year with the D-backs going to the World Series, winning 84 games. I really find it hard to imagine that Bo and Vlad are playing at a level where they're so good where you have to trade them now because their trade value is so high and you're that far out of a third wild card. I think that third wild card is really a safety net. I don't see a scenario where their guys are performing, their stars are performing, and they're so far out of it. I think that at the very least, they'll be within the hunt, and that'll force them to even spend. I don't see this team falling out of the race, the wild card race, with their stars performing to their capabilities.
Completely with you, but if they do fall out, pick a direction.
No, absolutely. Yeah. I think that if you look at, if you're managing a team on paper, yeah, that'd be the smartest move. Pivoting early, as we mentioned.
And I completely agree with the pivot early option, but James, you made it sound like you don't see a pathway to Vlad or Bo getting re-signed.
Look, I'd love to have both back. I'd love to have Bo back. But being a fan in this damn city, how many times we've seen people choose to go somewhere else or leave? And the fact that they have had ample opportunities to lock these guys up and they haven't done so. And as I mentioned, they haven't locked up the core. They haven't locked up anybody past 2 or 3 years. There's a reason behind that. There's a reason they didn't go out on a limb and give a Bellinger a term contract. They didn't want to give a Chapman a 3-year deal. Like, there's a reason behind all of this stuff. And the reason is, I don't think they know what the future is going to hold with this core. So as much as I would love to keep them both around, don't get me wrong, I would love to keep them around because they were groomed by this organization. We were watching Vladdy hit moonshots at 16. You know, you don't want to see him in another jersey, but I don't know what Mark and Ross have up their sleeve, and I don't even know if they know yet.
Yeah, that's fair.
And best course of action, this team just goes off, has a great first half of the season. Yeah. They're planted in the midst of a wild card, or heck, even leading the division, who knows? And the conversation is, how do we make this team better, and how do we clear up the books so that we can make a competitive offer to both Bo and Vlad this offseason after they both had terrific seasons leading this team to the postseason? And hey, who knows? Maybe if you win a playoff game or two or a few more, then that makes it all that much easier.
That's the hope. The final Banter Bay question was regarding our City Connectors. It's been a topic of conversation the last 3 years. Confirmed that the Jays are getting one this year. They asked, you know, what will it look like? I think that there's two things, and I'm going to be the one that answers the question and we move on. I think there's two things that are guaranteed in this jersey. Something replicating the CN Tower and the number 6, some results as well. Those two things I think are locks. When could we see them? I think in the first homestead could be a realistic option. Now,
I have a Maple Leaf too, though, right? Like,
but I think that because it's part of the Jays logo itself, I think that that's like automatic. Like, it'll just be there, but a default. Yeah,
fair enough.
Maybe some OVO colors too.
Say,
I was gonna say maybe some OVO colors too.
Oh, I hope not, because Drake really has nothing to do with the Jays, so like, I don't think that'll be the case. But regardless, on to more important things, and that is 3 games in Minute Maid Park coming up right now, this Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern on all 3 of them. Tomorrow, got Bowden Francis making his first Major League start. Obviously, a tough one in Minute Maid, a very hitter-friendly ballpark, one of the best offenses in baseball. The Jays are going up against Ronald Blanco. Same thing, haven't faced him, haven't seen him once. So, you know, who knows what'll happen there. He's an off-speed guy. Doesn't really have an overpowering fastball. Basically what the Jays saw all weekend long with the Tampa Bay Rays. And then for the last 2 games in Houston, it should get pretty spicy. Jose Berrios versus Framber Valdez and Chris Bassitt versus Christian Javier, which both Bassitt and Berrios, great in Houston or against Houston last year. Both made 2 starts. Both were good in those 2 games. But as for the opposing starters, Valdez and Javier, they are dominant in Minute Maid Park. So I think that those two games should be low scoring despite the hitter-friendly ballpark. What do you guys think?
Remember that game last year at Rogers Center where they teed off on Framber Valdez? So kind of hoping I'm hoping the Jays can find a way to abuse the short porch, the Crawford box, or not Crawford box, right?
Yeah,
Crawford
well, because yeah. especially this year when they're going for a more pull approach.
Exactly. And a lot of right-handed bats, pull approach equals Crawford box. So I don't know, boys. And we also saw, look, we saw Bradley Zimmer hit a home run off Justin Verlander in that damn thing a couple of years ago. Like these and guys can't
he went back to back with Espinal. I remember.
Ooh, yeah. God, what a duo, fellas. What a duo. But also remember last year, I think it's like every year with Houston, though, they always have a weird, slow start to the season. Like they just got swept in four games at home against the Yankees. It's just gone. Brooms out. That's it. They always seem to have a slow start to the season, and then they find a way to figure it out as the year goes along. The Jays are finding them at the right time. They lost four in a row, an awful first homestand. You could look at it another way saying, oh, they're pissed. They want to kick your ass. There's another side of it that you can look at it, but I don't know. You have some of your best starters going out there. I would be scared shitless to see Yusei Kikuchi in that series.
Yeah, no, a couple of things. Yeah, I'm definitely on the ladder school of thought on that, James. I think when you see like a serious team struggling, I think the other side, I think that, oh no, you're not playing them at the right time. Maybe you're, this is a team that obviously has been through the ringer and back. They know what it's like. They're not going to panic and they're going to even out. And we saw, watch that last inning. They were just, the Yankees got away with that one today. A lot of pixie dust, a lot of sick plays in the field by the Yankees. Credit to them. They made the plays. They swept them, a huge series, a sweep for them. I think the Astros are, they're going to be tough. They're always tough. Sure. Obviously this is a franchise organization that they've accomplished so much to the point where in a sense their cheating scandal has almost kind of become irrelevant, not irrelevant as in that World Series has an asterisk to it, which it 100% does. But at the same time, it's like when you've had that much success absent of that individual season, you got to tip the cap. It's been a team that consistently wins that division, consistently makes deep World Series runs. They won a World Series just a couple years ago. They're going to be tough to beat. They always are. They're always going to be a team that's going to stand within the rest of the American League teams and getting to the World Series. That being said, the Blue Jays, the last couple seasons, we all acknowledge disappointing years for the team. They've done well against the Astros. They've won the season series two straight years in a row, 3-3 at Minute Maid Park. And obviously, as we mentioned, Bowden Francis against who's Blanco? Blanco's pitching for the Astros tomorrow. They're a fifth starter. So, yeah, I'll be honest. Two guys who we just haven't really seen, like Bowden Francis, all the stuff we heard about spring training. Let's see what happens now in his first career big league start pitching outside of non-high leverage situations. It's going to be a question mark. We don't know what we're going to get. We don't know what we're going to get from Blanco as well. It could go either way, as it always does. It's really early in the season. I think you want to play the good teams early on in the year before they find their groove. So Definitely. Hopefully the Blue Jays can get a series win. That's all we want.
Also, funny thing I wanted to bring up, Cole, sorry to jump in, but the last year, the series at Minute Maid Park, Rob, you and your crazy knowledge of past year's baseball games, bases loaded, nobody out. You had a chance to sweep them in that series. Yeah, I remember down 2-1 in the eighth or whatever it was. Yeah. It was like 2-1 in the eighth. Yeah, the base is loaded. Nobody out. Couldn't cross anything and you lose. You could have swept them. So, yeah. Bad memories. All last year was bad memories. Let's be honest.
Also, Danny Jansen would have been really nice to have in this series. You mentioned the full power of the Crawford boxes. I feel like that ballpark, tailor-made for Danny Jansen. If the Jays don't re-sign him, if I'm the Astros, their catching situation, it's not all that great. I mean, they have Caratini, but is he the starting catcher? Do they still have Maldonado?
Regardless, they can't hit. We'll find out. So let's just go with that.
Yeah, but regardless, I mean, if I'm the Astros, I'm taking a real look at Danny Jansen if the Jays somehow don't get him to extend. But yeah, no, that he would have been really nice to have in this series.
Yeah, the Astros are the definition of what we wish we were, which is clutch. All of their top hitters, besides just being amongst the best in the league, just straight up raw numbers, they're also really good when they need to be good. And that is probably the scariest thing. A couple more negatives, if we want to take it that way, with this Jays series in Houston, besides us being good in the last couple of years. Chris Bassitt, historically in his career, has been really bad against or in Minute Maid Park. I think it was either in Minute Maid or against Houston in general, but he's got like an 850 OPS in one of those two scenarios. But last year he was good. So hopefully it's, you know, obviously last year's Chris Bassitt, not historical Chris Bassitt in Oakland. So hopefully that's the case. But Danny Jensen, you mentioned him. He was one of the guys that homered off of Javier last year, I believe it was, in the two starts he had against us. So, or no, he only had two starts against us, period. Actually, we missed him on the second go-around, I think, or we didn't get him on the first go-around, and we hit two homers off of him. Jansen was one of those guys. So it would have been nice to have him this week, but of course, not what's going to happen. I think that we're good for the preview. It's going to be, like I said, could be low scoring, but of course it's Minute Maid, so who knows what happens there. To wrap up the show, we got two more things. First, Stat Genius, then On the Farm. But of course, we start with the numbers.
Absolutely love it,
boys. I can get used to that. I tell you, that's beautiful.
Okay.
As I teased early on in the show, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., we all know the centerpiece of this team, regardless of whether you want to call him the best hitter or not, we know he has the highest upside, the only one who's ever had a 1,000 OPS over the course of a season, a legitimate MVP candidate that year. Can he get back to that season has been a question hit into the ground repeatedly over the course of the last couple seasons. And mainly because while the raw numbers don't suggest that, the advanced number suggests why not. And so far, the advanced numbers, very early, once again, we've prefaced everything in this podcast. We understand it's only one series in. Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s advanced numbers are ridiculous. They were ridiculous last year. There's no percentiles yet on Baseball Savant because of the small sample size. But compared to last year, so far, I'm looking at right here, barrel percentage way up. Launch angle, we were hoping, can it get to double digits? Last year, it was 9 point something, 15.7 so far in this Tampa series. That projects really well, projects a lot of balls in the air, not on the ground, which has been a problem for Vlad over the course of his career. The sweet spot, hard hit percentage, and even the stuff that doesn't require hitting, the strikeout percentage, the swing and miss percentage, the walk percentage, all looking very promising. So far, so good for Vlad in terms of the raw numbers, but even the stuff under the hood looks just terrific. If Vlad can keep this up, yeah, there's no reason to think he can't have another spectacular season. So far, numbers are awesome. The advanced numbers are terrific.
Rob, you mentioned under the hood, and the only thing I can think about is diesel engine. That's all I got.
No. That'll be the last Tanner Roark reference in a while, hopefully.
My Stat Genius number is, we saw it today, and we didn't see it a lot last year. Jays scored in the first inning. Last year, they were amongst the worst teams when it came to first inning runs. Second last in the entire league. So I went through it. I went through all 162 games to see how many times did they actually score in the first inning, and in those games, what ended up happening. So 36 times they scored in the first inning, equating to 64 runs, I think it is. And they went 21-15. So despite the number of any team that scores first usually wins at a 70% clip, the Jays won at a 58% clip in scoring the first inning, which doesn't mean they scored first. Obviously, they could have came in the bottom of the order and scored after they have already given up runs, or they could have scored first later in the game and gotten a win. So the two numbers don't go apples to apples, but you know, most times if you score in the first inning, you're probably scoring first. And for the Jays, despite it not even happening very often, even when it did happen, it didn't mean that they were very successful in it. They basically were the same winning percentage they were in the entire season. So it was an interesting factoid, really no overall conclusion I'm coming to, but the Jays scored obviously today in the first inning, so hopefully that's a sign of things to come, and got a W out of that one. So one for one on the 2024 season. Now for James, he is our farm guy, so we're going to the farm for James Price. What's happening in Buffalo in the first weekend?
Well, yeah, as you mentioned, what's going on in Buffalo? Because there's nothing else going on yet. So the farm is quite dry, you know, and the animals aren't ready to go yet. They're not fired up. But anyways, what is going on is Ricky Tiedemann got his first start of the regular season for the Buffalo Bisons. And that's really the only person that everybody cares about to this point. And in his first start in Buffalo, it was very minimal. 2 2/3, 3 hits, 1 run. It was a solo shot. Hit a guy, walked a couple, and struck out 3. Now, apparently the elements in Buffalo were horrific, to the point where that the cameras were shaking on the broadcast. Like, it was putrid. So take that for what it is. Spencer Horowitz, who we saw at points last season with the Blue Jays, still a top 30 prospect, and he absolutely crunched a 3-run shot in that same start of Ricky Tiedemann. So it was kind of a good narrative day for Blue Jay fans. But other than that,
unfortunately.
Well, wins and losses. Who cares, right? But other than that, not much else to talk about. Really, Aurelvis Martinez, the strikeout numbers are still fairly low on him. Only a couple strikeouts in his first three games, but he's got an extra base hit and a walk as well to go along with that. So, again, you know what you're going to get from these guys. You're going to see Tiedemann at some point this year. You're probably going to see Aurelvis. Again, Rob mentioned him earlier as a possible guy in that jumbled up infield of Ernie Clement and Davis Schneider and stuff like that. You can add Aurelvis to that mix. I really do think he's going to be a big part of this team moving forward. But that's really it for the farm. Obviously, as the season goes along, there'll be a lot more teams to talk about, a lot more players to talk about. But for right now, for Buffalo, Ricky Tiedemann's at the forefront of everybody, and his stuff looks good, and it's he's healthy. That's another thing.
Quickly, we're just, you know, gun your head over under. When does Ricky Tiedemann come up with the Blue Jays this year, James?
A lot of people say, well, May 1st, because of the whole, you know,
service time. Yeah.
Yeah. That I think it's gonna be later than that. I truly think it's gonna be later than that, just for the fact that they want to see what they're going to get from a guy like Alek Manoah first.
Yeah.
Ricky Tiedemann threw a total of 44 innings last season at any level. He's thrown a combined like 120 innings. I think it is the last 2 years combined. It's not very much. So there's no reason to rush this guy. It's not like your rotation is depleted to all hell. Right. You need him to eat innings for you. No. You have the guys. You have a guy in Alek Manoah who you're probably going to see around May-ish as a wild card option. And so if all else fails and a guy like Bowden Francis doesn't do all that great, or Manoah eventually comes up and is putrid yet again, you know, by then, assuming he's healthy and assuming the results are there, then you can maybe get the call of Ricky Tiedemann. But I don't see it happening before then.
Okay, I'm changing the over-under. Over-under June 1st.
Over as in, like, it happens later on in the season?
Later, or, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'll take the over on that.
Okay, Rob.
Over-under June 1st. Tough question. We actually talked about this before we actually started recording, about the prospects of this Blue Jays team for the first time. It looks like they have a lot of options. You know, with Bowden Francis, who we haven't seen yet, by the way. When we're recording this, we have no idea what Bowden Francis is going to be pitching as a legitimate big league starter. So obviously huge question mark there, but if he's something and Alek Manoah is pitching well, whenever he comes back from his injury, all of a sudden on a team that's contending, you have six legitimate big league guys. So as much as I want to say, we'll see Ricky Tiedemann because he's just got such high upside. It's not an Alek Manoah situation where he sort of came up a little bit by necessity. He was rushed through the pipelines because the team wanted to contend, and he was their best option. At this point, Ricky Tiedemann, if the guys are going well without injuries, I think you keep him in there. Now, at the same time, if Ricky Tiedemann is pitching terrific in AAA and you see this guy as such a high upside guy who's going to be part of your pitching staff for the next half decade plus, I'd recommend you throw him into the rotation right away. You don't want to waste. We know with pitchers, there's only so much guns left in the bullet. You know what I mean? Eventually, there's an expiry date on everybody.
Only guns left in the bullet. Just,
yeah.
Oh, my God. There's only so much bullets left in the gun. I got a little
there back. We okay. go. I had to think here about that for a second. That's a little weird. That's tricky.
Bullets in the gun. Regardless, if Ricky Tiedemann, if you've come to a conclusion that this guy, regardless of what the stature of the rotation is one of your best five starting pitchers, he's got to be pitching at the big league level, man. It's all hands on deck season. You got to have some success. If he's your high upside guy, it's got to go. It's got to pitch. I think a lot of it's going to depend on him. He's got the upside to be a top five starting pitcher on this roster right now. If he lives up to it, I think you got to find a way.
That's so fair. Long-winded way of saying.
I will go. I'll go over after June 1st. I do think that this team. I think a lot of it is because they have starters who are good, but they're also a big part of their value proposition is that they're durable. You know, Berríos, Chris Bassett went 200 innings. Kevin Gausman, he's made like 30-plus starts the last few seasons of his career. Like, this is a rotation that doesn't really get hurt. So I think that Ricky Tiedemann will kind of be blocked in a bit. I do think he'll get his opportunity, but I'll say no on June 1st.
Yeah, they also have massive depth, the starting rotation, like Rob's guy, Paulo Espino.
We didn't mention him in the firm. He actually had a good start. Six innings, five strikeouts. I'm going to mention him because we have people in the chat that were thinking about him over Nate Pearson or him over Wes Carson or him over, you know, whoever in our bullpen. So
there's a reason a guy's 37 throwing under 90. And in the
I think James mentioned the animals about how they're getting a little
he's an animal, all right.
Paolo Espino's it's an older steed, we'll say that. It's an elder steed.
Okay. I'm also taking the over, by the way, on Ricky Tiedemann. Unfortunately, I agree with all of the points here. There is no reason to rush him, and the Jays shouldn't be in a spot where he's forced into the rotation anyways. And that will wrap up the show. Like I said, we got Astros for three at Minute Maid Park, somewhere we've been successful the last couple of years. So hopefully that continues this time through in a tough road trip to start the year. You're watching the Blue Jay Center podcast presented by the Sick Podcast Network. I'm Cole Whiston, Rob Pentelemon, and James Price. We'll see you on Thursday.
Go Jays.
And that's a wrap. Hope you don't miss us too much until next time. Follow the Sick Podcast Blue Jay Center on YouTube, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts.